Hello, this is Daryl War for the September-October 2021 update in the Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows, a radio drama initially as a relief series to help the characters in the 1960s soap opera Dark Shadows with a whole lot of other characters from other shows and movies, and because of what's happened to enhance a lot of control over humanity in computer electronics. There's a lot more of me talking, so I'm going to try to talk to some purpose. Now, the radio drama, The Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows, is an interruption series on multiple levels. It interrupts Dark Shadows. It interrupts the ghost of Mrs. Muir. They come in, the characters from that show in the 60s comes into play. And interrupts Bewitched. Those characters come into play further down the line from number one, obviously. Then there is continuation as well with the Addams Family. That ended in the earlier 60s, prior to the beginning of the Dark Shadows program, and the monsters, although there is some precursory added stuff of Lily hanging out with Elizabeth Stoddard in the 1940s. It goes in a lot of different directions, but for the most part, it is an interruption fan work. So for this show that I'm doing right now, I wanted to talk about something that a lot of people have really been wanting. Anytime I actually do hear from people, they're like, I can't wait till the Doctor Who people come in. And I'm like, well, me too. I've been imagining it for years and years. My husband and I even went on a walk today, and it was lovely. I'm like, saying who knows the Doctor. There's a lot of people who know the Doctor outside of a lot of people in Collinsport or at Collinwood, the estate. I remember O'Sheen years ago said, well, is the TARDIS just floating around somewhere? How does that come into... I'm like, you know, the ghost of Caleb Collins, who I've fleshed out in so many words from what little information there was about his past dying in 1872-ish. So, if he knows Beetlejuice, he was the one who invited him, or knew about him, and told Barnabas how to find him, or what was going to happen when the bioexorcist came into play. And of course, with that, it is precursor information, not continuation, but precursor filling in past gaps with the bioexorcist. And so it's going to be the ghost of Caleb Collins. He's got aerial nodes. He's told at least one other character he's got aerial nodes and then talked about how that's going to confuse you too. So yeah, it's going to be Mama Caleb to the rescue. I definitely have ideas with the ghost of Caleb Collins. Oh, what you want now? Feed me, clothe me, solve my problems for me. That kind of thing. So, yeah, it would eventually be the ghost of Caleb, just getting sick of quantum mechanics and parallel time and that kind of thing happening. But we were talking about that today, me and my husband, and we had done some geek stuff the other night, which was, it's been so much fun, because we're going through the Fourth Doctor as much as we can watch, and we watch it pretty darn slowly, and we get through a lot of the extras, which are totally fun, and totally what I love about entertainment is finding out the back history, and what the key players thought of things, and really, the commentary on those, where I was still listening to the commentary for Stones of Blood, and it's got Susan Engel, who played the villain, really marvelous villain, in fact, because a lot of the villains in the Doctor Who universe are very, we're going to conquer the galaxy and there's going to be nobody else but us. And it's, oh my gosh. Whereas the villain that Susan Engel plays, Vivian Fay, is a villain that just wants one corner of maybe one world and has it for a few thousand years. That's it. Until she gets caught. But that's not asking a lot. It's not asking as much as the Daleks or the Cybermen or whoever else. Just about any musterable Doctor Who villain, just, you know, so many of them. Just, they're going to conquer everything, and I'm like, oh, go away. Even Doctor Who, the Doctor, he's like, oh, you megalomaniacs, I've heard it a million times before. And he has. So, the commentary with Susan Engel, Mary Tam, Tom Baker, and then by the second episode, David Fisher, the writer, comes in. And at the end of the first one in the commentary, Tom Baker's, are we the only three left alive? And one of the other people say, oh, maybe, or something to the effect of that. And then he starts the second episode asking that same question. And David Fisher comes in and says, well, there's me. The writer. And that was marvelous, just having three of the actors in that four-episode set talk to the writer, asking him specific questions. And all in fun. It's like they're heckling themselves almost the entire time. It's beautiful. So it came up where I was like, okay, why don't we try and figure out, because it's going to be interrupting Doctor Who, Fourth Doctor as well, finding some point at which we can pull the Doctor and K-9 away. And so he's going through reminiscences of who the assistants slash companions were. And he went through who the later ones were, which were lost to my recognition because I was so young, were kind of just going back in time together watching Fourth Doctor, Doctor Who. So we investigated it, get a grasp of how things formulate down the road with Romana, both 1 and 2. And it looks like we have about 10 more Doctor Who stories to get through before figuring out how to interrupt it for the Pit series, which is mine. And when my husband discussed Romana and K-9 departing, I realized, oh, it's got to be before that, because I've already written stuff for the Doctor, finding Barnabas, and K-9 still being around, some of which has been seen slash read slash heard. So our interruption needs to be somewhere prior to the Full Circle set of episodes. Full Circle is an actual title of a set of, I think, 4 episodes. Now, I like Romana a lot as we watch, but in my head, so far, Romana de Vatrilundar and Barnabas Collins don't meet or interact. It's mainly the Doctor and Barnabas, and some K-9 here and there. K-9's existence is a proper freak-out for someone like Barnabas, and cannot be dispensed with. Even as Barnabas Collins' freak-outs are often subdued, the deal is everyone who knows him feels it for him.
So at this point we've gone through, with Romana, the Rebus operation, Pirate Planet, which was actually written by Douglas Adams, and there were some key lines where I was like, that really sounds like Douglas Adams. And that's been interesting too, just because he's been a huge inspiration. And as a young teenager, I was told, this is reminding me of Douglas Adams. And that was a big compliment back then, but it's an even bigger one now. And I was giving the Hitchhiker series to a pen pal who enjoys The Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows, and I thought, oh my gosh, you know, she's so elated to get this Douglas Adams series, and she loves what I do, and I should not be surprised because of that compliment. And I got it multiple times. And I definitely feel for him, because I feel that, you know, there were a lot of things that troubled Mr. Adams that I was able to break through, because there was just a lot of things that he had suffered that wasn't even on my radar as far as obligations. And I think that was part of it. As well as, you know, just getting fed up with the computer and opening a notebook. There were times like that that I've learned about. So anyway, that's Pirate Planet. And yeah, there was... Boy, yeah, I think the captain really did seem very Vogon in a lot of ways. Then we're at Stones of Blood. I talked about that. And then I guess for the rest of the Key of Time, season 16 of Doctor Who, the androids of Tara or Terra, the power of Quoll, the Armageddon factor. And that looks like it'll wrap up the Key to Time scenario. And that was another thing that my husband and I were talking about, where we were walking and he was like, well, do you want to know how it wraps up? And I'm not opposed. I don't think it's going to spoil anything for me. And then he explains what he remembers as best he can, and I have to heckle it. I'm like, what is this? Lord of the Rings? Because you go through all that trouble. And I'm all, but the plan with the Lord of the Rings was to destroy the ring, and he says yes. I'm all, okay. So, but I mean, to me, the heckle still stands. What is this Lord of the Rings? And then I kind of thought, well, wouldn't it be funny if, like, maybe we could interrupt somewhere in when they still have the darn thing? And it could be Barnabas Collins in The Key to Time. A novel by Marilyn Ross. Or, you know, maybe Hare would be in there somewhere, you know, if anybody's familiar with the Marilyn Ross Dark Shadows novels, and just, you know, all kinds of wacky. But it was fun because at the beginning of the walk, before he told me that, I said, you know, there's a lot of people that I believe that know the Doctor, and Wadsworth would be one of them. Wadsworth, the butler from Clue, the movie. I've thought of this, and I did a little performance on our walk for him, and I've had it in my mind for years where you see the TARDIS come in somewhere on the estate, and you hear Willy ask, Wadsworth, what the hell is that? And Wadsworth confidently says, Mr. Loomis, that is a TARDIS. Had that in my mind for years. Kind of kept me going, if you know what I mean, just with all the hassle and BS. So, yeah. And there are multiple other stories past the Key of Time in the Fourth Doctor portions of Doctor Who. So when we get through the story, Meglos, we'll hopefully find a portion in the whole of the Fourth Doctor run to interrupt and devise some point at which Romana is occupied, so it could just be the Doctor and K-9 who get the call on this separate Collinsport errand involving the Dark Shadows Leviathans, another Dominance villain group that might as well come from Doctor Who. And, yeah, between now, where we are with Stones of Blood,
And then the end of Meglos, there are 42 episodes of Doctor Who to be viewed. That and the zillion other shows in mind should keep us busy for some time to come. But, you know, I mentioned that because people get excited. Oh, you're going to add... I mean, I've been saying this for years. I wanted the help, but, you know, the help was not that available considering the overloaded distraction that's just pervaded everybody's lives. I mean, you get really lucky if you can find somebody who hasn't been roped into so many of the problems, including almost a reflex of having to criticize and say, do it all over again, because they don't know what else to say. They're out of habit or practice in discussing narrative that they enjoy and why they enjoy the narrative that way. And that's been the problem for years, and I didn't know until very recently that that was the problem. And that's why all these people are being rude and have no idea that they're being rude, because they've just been trained to be rewarded with what we would consider in the 20th century to be extremely rude behavior. But they've been rewarded to do that, to behave that way. And that's why I've been pretty much gotten weird abuse over the years, even from pen pals. It's just deliriously awful. And it's one of those things, well, can you forgive? What is there to forgive if somebody doesn't even know what they're doing? It's not even your fault. You know, and me too. I've been able to live with what's happened to me because I was struggling for so long to try and figure out what the answers were. And that's why I knew about Humane Tech a lot earlier than that film came out. There's only people within the last year who are just starting to know who is involved in the Center for Humane Technology. I was hunting. And then what was said was, in some of Tristan Harris's interviews, he was like, we've been screaming at the top of our lungs. I'm like, me too. And it took you screaming at the top of your lungs for me to hear you. It's awful. But that means they care. You know, like I said, I was the whistleblower Spider-Man version, because I was spinning webs and cracking jokes. I'm happy for the Justice League to take over, but I will keep informing you of the Justice League is there and try to get more involved. And I'm sorry to use comic book and cartoon metaphors here, but that is the best I can think of to explain the situation. And I think I tried to explain this before. The podcast Your Undivided Attention and Other Things I've Learned from the Center for Humane Technology got rid of not only the 21st century anxiety I was going through, but there are a lot of old, harsh, upsetting memories from my life in the 20th century that made me angry and hurt and repeating in my head. Those are gone, too! A lot of those are gone! Because I discovered, wow, even then, they didn't know what they were doing. In fact, I told my cousin, she visited, and I said, this is interesting because as difficult as my relationship with my older sister is, there were a lot of good points, one of which was something she told me many years ago. And it wasn't exactly said to me in a way where this is how it is, as, you know, an older sister. It was more said in a way where she could have been speaking to anyone. And she said, you really look up to adults and grown-ups and you think that they have it all together and they know what they're doing. Then you get to this age and you realize a lot of them are just winging it. Which, in other words, Tristan Harris has also said about, you know, grown-ups in the room and official people and knowing what they're doing and that kind of thing. And somebody's going to pat you on the shoulder and say it'll all be okay. And they're also scared and worried and concerned, and human beings like all of us. But when you're little, you feel different about that, especially if there's costumes and special uniforms and that kind of thing. Yeah. So it's helped a lot to not only relieve me of 21st century anxieties, but very old 20th century anxieties, as well as appreciate greatly things like Sesame Street and Mr. Rogers and 321 Contact and kids' educational programming. It's like, oh, yeah, I feel a lot better understanding how everything works and that kind of thing. But yeah, getting to know the Fourth Doctor series better, I've just ruminated, wouldn't it be fun to have Barnabas in the Key of Time? And considering the Leviathans, yeah, I mean, the Key to Time is supposed to put an out-of-balance universe into balance, then yeah, the Leviathans are totally out of balance. They just put it together the right way, and it just, boom, gone. I mean, wouldn't that be lovely? Oh, if it was only that easy. Could be. Who knows? Like I said, one of my ideas was Milgen and Hecubus just giving them a film reel of Dunwich Horror and having them be distracted by that while everything else was going to go on. It was going to be that simple, and there are some things that just happen as simply in The Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows, such as Milgen telling Peter Bradford to forget who he is, and then that's why he forgot who he was. And then we fix that with Hoffman waving her medallion a la, you know, what Mrs. Johnson tells Sophia Petrillo, and that's why Peter Bradford remembered who he was, because Julia was just throwing that thing around all over the place. He got mesmerized. Oh, I'm Peter Bradford. Okay, good. I remember now. Da-da-da. So some things just happen that simply and that quickly. You miss them. Because I was trying to condense it. I was like, this thing is so darn huge. But now it's getting longer because I'm trying to get through so much more with notes. And, you know, and I want to explain to all y'all, you know, Doctor Who is hopefully going to show up at some point. But we have to get through the Turn of the Screw portion and the 1897 portion, which is so huge. And find a way that Quentin will, you know, after whoever else comes along, he'll meet back up with Angelique. I really think that, I mean, they've got such a good chemistry, especially Laura Parker and David Selby. It's just so darn easy to see. And she was adamant in 1897. She's even arguing with Barnabas Collins to find a way to win Quentin's affections and marriage. And that kind of thing. And if that doesn't convince you, I don't know what does. And that's why I say 1840, parallel time, Angelique is Mark II. It's not the Angelique that we all grew with very much as a Mark II. You know, like all these things are just gone and it's not the same Angelique at all. It's more Angelique Mark II. Just sort of a reset. And so we've got, you know, trying to get to 700. Chris Jennings comes to Collinsport and a series of terrible deaths follow. Well, we're going to try to augment a few of those or stop a few of those. And with Madame Finlay Gets Bored, which I want to dedicate to the actress, Cavada or Cavada, I don't quite know how to pronounce her name. Hopefully I'll find out before the actual episode. And shared the demo with Oisin, and she got back to me splendidly and just let me know certain things, like Roger isn't any kind of inheritor. And that makes a lot of sense, because even later when we saw Carolyn taking the reins on the estate because of one of Joan Bennett's famous vacations, meaning Elizabeth Stoddard is for some reason out for the count, even in the first year that was happening. That was the first time that Carolyn's like, okay, I'm in charge because I'm told, you know, I'm the inheritor. And Roger wasn't, I guess, so I've had to kind of fix that in 24, some of the dialogue that Oisin was gracious enough to help me with. And then just trying to smooth Madame Finlay to be a lot more confident and self-assured. And there are certain moments where the actress gets that down, especially talking to the kids. But there are other times that she gets too excited, and that's the part that me and Oisin and other people are like, that's, you know, she's that good of a medium, this would not affect her. But Oisin did ask, because I thought, what would she plop into a seat in that locked room in the West Wing? And she's like, what would be the sound of dust arriving? I figure it's like, poof, you know, she's like, poof, poof. Because I'd seen that before, and I knew there was a sound that went with it when somebody sat on a chair, and this dust rises, it's sort of, whoo. Is that kind of a sound? But what I was just, oh, Milligan and Hecubus. Like I say, the boys have grown, and I'm so happy with how things have turned out. And what was great is Hecubus just gave it to me. That, because I figured Madame Finlay, she'd sit down and read a book. Quentin's locked her in the ghost, the evil ghost Quentin has somehow locked her in this room. She's just going to flick a match and get a candle going and read a book. And what book would that be? Well, how about a Henry James novel? Not necessarily Turn of the Screw, but might as well have a Henry James novel sitting in there somewhere. And if it is Turn of the Screw, then that would help her out anyway. And there it is, Hecubus says. And later, after Janet Finlay reads a few pages of a Henry James novel that just happened to be in the room. But yeah, at some point on the phone, she tells this ghost, or, you know, this ghost thing, possessing the children to cause harm will do very little but cause damage. And what? You wish to cause damage? I am becoming more assured this is not the voice of an agonized human spirit, but more in the realms of something else. And what my notes are for episode 25, In the Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows, and I've talked about this with my auntie, where Madame Finlay is explaining what these ghosts are. Yes, they're kind of echoes, but she explains it to what I have so far, Carolyn and Maggie. Well, what do you do with your nail clippings? And, you know, when you brush your hair, there's all this hair in the brush. I mean, do you save it? No, we throw it away. Well, that's what this is. That's what these ghosts are. There's like these remnants. They're like, the, you know, or even one of the girls say it's like remnants. You know, yeah, it is. It's remnants of agonized emotion, things that happened. What is termed ghosts in other cases, whereas, well, a lot of times when we say ghosts, we mean human spirits just kind of floating on the mortal realm. But these would be more the echo ghosts, the ghosts that sometimes there's just these echoes of strong emotion that are hanging around and causing major damage. Yeah, one scary tale, I remember, you know, just hearing about wells and mines and people hearing voices calling out. Just tales like that where, you know, people really get scared, thinking, you know, there is somebody, whether they're alive or not, trapped in this problem, whereas it might just be a resonance that has maintained that area. So there is that, which I think they also talked about in the Poltergeist. Dr. Lesh talked about, like, a, you know, a poltergeist was different than a haunting, because hauntings are more about a place, whereas a poltergeist kind of involves itself with the actual people, something to the effect of that, that I recall in Dr. Lesh's explanation to the Freelings. And yeah, it's fiction, you know, the movie, but at the same time, they've got to work with something, so they grabbed it from somewhere. Oh gosh, too, and I've got some stuff where, since Maggie's figured out that she is Josette, and that there's sort of this astral projection thing that she can do, she's just more consciously aware of it now, whereas in maybe the first year, she was doing it not knowing. So she tells her dad, she tells Sam, that she was responsible in that first year for kind of possessing him, painting the images of Laura, that she was kind of responsible as the ghost of Josette, because that was what was going on when you think about it. In the 1897 portion, Laura comes back, and Angelique is the one who basically brings her down, whereas in the first year, it's the ghost of Josette. So there's this shared opponent, and I've written about it on the WordPress weblog. So Sam is mentioning in this rough draft that I've got so far for episode 25 in the pit, because he's trying to paint something now, you know, in this episode, and it's something that's been overwhelming my mind, says Sam. I'm getting as irritated by it as, and Maggie says, Laura Collins' painting you did years ago? He asks, you remember that? So how could I forget, Papa? Josette's ghost made you do that. Which means, I made you do that. And he says, or no, he sighs. You made me, it's all coming out. And we already have so much more to do. She says, yes, I put David into that gap in the fiery portrait of Laura you could paint. And he says, ugh. I would say, I'll be damned, but there's no getting past that for either of us, is there? And she says, c'est la vie. And he says, just like in the novel, c'est la vie in effet, ma petite demoiselle. Now, what about the portrait I have here? And she asks, what about it? And because I think it's Quentin, he says, well, there it is. It looks like a head-on collision between a fashion plate and a nightmare. She says, the head only has one prominent feature. And Sam says, yes, the sideburns on the guy. She says, very fashionable back in the 1800s. And Sam says, as a great deal of facial hair was, what else was there to wear? And she tells him, I hear you, Pop. Not everyone had a full wardrobe. One set of clothing was all a lot of people had. Just those are the little bits that I can give you as far as, oh gosh, yeah, and I've written this down from Doctor. Great line that Tom Baker says. It may be irrational of me, but human beings are quite my favorite species. Of course, he's got to say that because that's what a lot of the show entails. So, yeah, for my show, you know, I'm talking about this Doctor Who stuff, not soon to come, someday to come, hopefully, knock on wood, Lord willing and the crick, all that. But thankfully, I also mentioned, just because that's where we are, you know, I've been doing all these extras because people can't get in touch, for whatever reason they can't get in touch. There's a lot of reasons that they can't get in touch, one of which is they don't have long-term correspondence skills anymore. The big machine makers have taken those away and made you pay for it, which really ticks me off. It was like $60 to $100 a month, so they can have all this stuff to take away your personality. It's ridiculous. That is more than a money ripoff. Seriously. So in order to get to the Leviathans and Dark Shadows, and where Doctor Who comes into place, we have to go through the Turn of the Screw portion, Haunting of Collingwood, and a lot of stuff in 1897, and hopefully rearrange it in some way that's going to make more sense than maybe the original series. There's a listener who got back in touch with me for a second listen to the narrative that I have so far. Not interested in Dark Shadows, knows about it, but is really interested in the pit for all the other shows. Goes to Mrs. Muir being one of them. He watched Clue the movie and was suspicious of Wadsworth for some time, but has now decided he's one of his favorite characters. Thank, you know, hallelujah, because, yeah, I mean, for me, it was very much automatic. I never believed the third ending, and I don't think I ever will. It just didn't make sense to me. The other two, there seem to be more reasons
for those particular people to have done what they did. But it was just a movie, so I didn't really worry about taking the third ending seriously at all. And I learned what I learned, that, yeah, you can do the Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows with Wadsworth in canon, because initially, each of those endings depended on what reel you got at the movie theater. You know, and then the DVD gives it back to you that way. If you want a just random ending, or you want all three, like the VHS technology only has one strip of magnetic tape, so they had to devise some way, and they just decided to say, well, this is what really happened after, you know, what about this? So, being such a big Clue fan, I went with, yeah, we can have him back. And also, I have to remind people, it's kind of strange, I have to remind people, if the third ending was the actual ending, Wadsworth couldn't be in the Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows as a mortal human being, because he died. Mr. Green shot him. You know, and you saw him just perish in the hall. So, he couldn't be in here anyway. So, and that was the thing that grabbed a lot of people in episode one. Wadsworth. And they're not even starting with, that doesn't make sense. They're just so happy to see the man again. Even just in their heads, as I'm doing his voice, not that great. They're just happy to see him again. And damn it, so am I. I'd been wanting a continuation. It seemed to just, this happened automatically. I didn't take it seriously. The Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows was a hobby. Off to the side, when I got home from work, it was a hobby. And then it became a passion, because it solved a lot of other problems in my life. I've talked about those before. And yeah, I mean, if you've looked at my Dreamwidth journal, it's like me and my auntie talked about in one of my entries there, where I was saying, yeah, years ago, I would have considered this silly and cheesy, but when you feel that bad, like I did, I didn't even have a name, Anhedonia, until near the end. I did not have the name Anhedonia. It was always like depression or something else, and everybody just trying to figure out how to make me feel better. That was going to be an instantaneous pill, and nothing worked. This worked. So if you have something plaguing you for 8 years, you don't really care if something silly and cheesy cures you. You just care that it does. That's how it became a passion. It cured me. There was a lot of 8 years of problems. So yeah, and that's what, and also, I mean, my past also, but I mean, when people were giving me a hard time, some of which was influenced by a lot of this computer electronics that have been sophisticated to mess with your head and take away parts of your personality. And some people are coming at me like we're in grade school or high school, and I'm like, psh, I've been there before. I don't care. I just want 25 people and 5 substantial comments per episode so I can finish this thing. My life experience, like, I don't, you know, so some of you kids that were just like, why is she not responding the way we've been taught to respond? Because I had a much different life and I didn't give a damn. I'm just like, get out of my way. That's what I've been saying earlier. Get out of my way. If you don't like it, go away. I don't care. You're going to be popular. Huh. Not this goth girl. You were talking to the wrong goth girl. Seriously. So, in order to get to 1897, there's a lot of stuff with Chris Jennings. There's a lot of stuff with Amy Jennings. Ooh, yeah, that stuff with David and Maggie. Ooh, I hope we can just bypass that going through, like, the 680s here in Dark Shadows, my notes. And I'm thinking if Janet Finley survives, then the 682 seance isn't going to be to call her, because she's going to be around. Because right now what I have for 25 is her saying, okay, well, this, I'm going to give you the evidence and the clues and the knowledge that I have about the situation, because I got other things to do. I've got other appointments, I've got other people to help, blah, blah, blah. So I've got 691. At Collinwood, the spirit of Quentin has become very strong. He is able to murder a medium, not in our plans here. She'll manage easily. Whom Professor Stokes brought in and survived Stokes' own exorcism of the house. I'd still like that to happen. I mean, those lines were so good. David is now almost completely under Quentin's spell. Beth has been able to protect Amy somewhat, but the evil influence has become so powerful that everyone is forced to leave and move in with Barnabas at the old house. Just that idea. Just, maybe I should, you know, if we do have an episode, like, we should call it Sleepover at the Old House. Golly. Well, it is a soap opera, so there's going to be just more and more and more and more and more. And then, oh, Sabrina. Yeah, that would be good to figure out, because I really like her. I got to figure out more about the Sabrina character, because that's Chris's, you know, girlfriend. And I really, yeah, again, just Ned. Just let Sabrina wake up and smack that guy. I still feel that way. Get out of the way, dude. I got my own life to live. Oh, is it going to be I Ching, the Time Warp, both, to get Barnabas to 1897?
There are votes for the Time War song. Everybody else singing it. Because, I mean, when you listen to the Time War or you watch Rocky Horror Picture Show, you can kind of tell who would be who from Collinwood in that scenario. Oh, I guess I got to go to 9:59, because that is, I guess, where Chris and Sabrina resume their romance. So maybe we could get that reinstated earlier if we kind of cure her. Like I said years ago, oh, you know, Julia, get the little black bag, get out the medallion. We got it out for episode 12. Maggie is remembering all her lives. Not a happy episode, but use the medallion for something useful. Not tweaking with people to stress them out and make them forget things. Like, get them to remember things. Like, yeah, use the medallion, use the hypnosis to remember, not to forget. And that's what's great about doing a Dark Shadows work, even though we've got all this other stuff, is that there are tools that could be useful and helpful, but most of the time they're used for destruction and to carry the darn thing on longer. In my July 2017 retrospective, the story suffers badly. Because you're not resolving things, you're just making them go on even longer. Next on the agenda is the very strange and very British story of how I could uncork Margaret Josette Dupré and the potential of a complex relationship involving reincarnation. I didn't think I knew, but I got calm enough and I finally figured it out.
You have heard, likely multiple times, my interview with Melissa, where she was astounded I could do the novel Margaret Josette Dupré, still in production, still in writing. And we had that discussion where so many people had, they really did, they had approached me, how did you do it? You know, they had the thoughts, like, how could these be possible? Like, I know that it's Maggie, and then it's Kitty and Josette, or in the opposite order, and how could you do it? I was saying in that interview with Melissa, I don't know. I just did it. And she says, and I started writing and I started typing and I couldn't stop. Now, having gone through old memories with myself, I figured it out. Because there were a lot of reincarnation stories. I was into all the spooky, multiple Dracula stories and multiple other spooky stories. And I almost forgot there was... For reincarnation stories, there was Sailor Moon I grew up on, and that's why Helena was okay, because she was a Sailor Moon fan, and she was like, yeah, of course, yeah. This is totally the same, as far as, like, multiple reincarnation personas involved. So it wasn't going to offend her. So then, you know, I see Dead Again, and Dean Spanley, and... On a Clear Day, and do the research for mainly Maggie, but for other characters in Dark Shadows. And then I finally remembered that one of the things I was watching kind of in tandem with Dark Shadows in 2012 and 2013 was As Time Goes By. And there's no reincarnation in that necessarily, but the couple involved, they are re-meeting after 38 years apart. And it's all about a letter that didn't get delivered, and something happened. And because of that romance, and seeing it develop with the guy who had put it together,
Colin Bostock Smith,
the idea of this letter just going astray, and these two people meet again after 38 years. Then Bob Larbee, who had done a lot of UK shows, kept building it, and he built it, a lot of it, on his own. Which is really good because you have less worry about continuity because he goes over his own stuff, and I'd been watching a lot of that. And that really is the closest you can get in a mortal story, that much time elapsing. And so I could easily see it being exposed to that. I could easily see a reincarnation of Josette and the continuation of Barnabas Collins coming out of the coffin after 170 plus years. But of course, the difference, the major difference, I mean, the characters are not that similar at all. There's Jean and Lionel, and you would never call Josette Dupré Iron Drawers. And you can't really see Barnabas Collins meticulously making sure that the dishes are stacked from the back of the dishwasher. But there is a similarity in as far as how much time has elapsed and that they regrow their relationship. And so now I can't say, I don't know, I just did it. It really was a lot of those spooky stories, a lot of those reincarnation stories. Definitely Love at First Bite. I mean, that was a big inspiration. But with Dark Shadows, Gene and Lionel for the win. It really was. And yeah, I would definitely promote that series. It's a wonderful series. I've been getting better binge watching that series again. And the wonderful thing is, because I had been binge watching it when I had anhedonia, when I was building the pit, and then I was watching it again, I got the whole DVD series. And I was like, why am I enjoying this so much? I was like binge watching it like 2 to 3 times. And I couldn't figure out why I was enjoying it so much more. Because the anhedonia has been cured. Because of the pit. Because of Margaret Chaussette de Bray. Yeah, it's wonderful. So, Gene and Lionel for the win. And if you've read Rebuilding Collinwood, I put that in there. I told my mom about that. Where I was like, yeah, when Josette and Barnabas sleep together again in one room, the title for that chapter in Rebuilding Collinwood, the sequel to Dark Shadows 2012, it should be called Hello Again. Just like at the end of that one episode of As Time Goes By with Gene and Lionel, and they say hello again. So that is the discussion for that. Now we gotta figure out where the hell we're gonna go now with the Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows. I hope everyone is doing well and looking over those sites that I will list here again, the not-so-commercial online journals, which is where social media began decades ago. So here they are. I will read them again. Penzu.com, PENZU.com. My-diary.org, MY-DIARY.org. And OpenDiary.com, OpenDiary.com. Journey.cloud, JOURNEY.CLOUD. Monkey.com, MONKKEE.COM. GoodNightJournal.com, GoodNightJournal.com. Lugello.com, LUGELO.COM. Prosebox.net, PROSEBOX.NET. InsaneJournal.com, InsaneJournal.com. And last but not least, DreamWidth.org, DreamWidth.org. Dream isn't sleeping, width isn't wide. And pencil and pen and paper, if need be, to keep a journal record of yourself.
And the reason that I keep on sharing that information is because the best defense that you have against any kind of surveillance is really just surveilling yourself, just watching yourself. And if you have old material that dates back even earlier that you haven't shared online, or even stuff that you have, I mean, if you could just gather all that information and turn the Wi-Fi off, pull it out of the wall or whatever you gotta do, that is the best that you can do, is just having the information for yourself, about yourself. And as nuts as I've gone, that was the reason that I was able to combat what I didn't really know I was combating, was having a lot of personal journals and recordings and stuff that I repeatedly looked at, read through, listened to, watched. So I was watching record of myself since I was 6. And even though I didn't know what was going on and why couldn't people help me or help each other, and getting so enmeshed in the tricks, I mean, you think you're looking at your own information, but somebody's just using that information against you to distract you. And that's likely another reason that long-term narrative focus is just out the window, because we're not getting anything in just a straight, long narrative. We're just getting pings and just tons of crazy distractions all over the place where, I mean, you couldn't focus because the machines just kept telling you where to put your focus and the focus kept on shrinking. So yeah, you could be fragmented and wiped out. So for anyone who is waking up a little bit and noticing that other people aren't, I hear you, I'm with you, I'm watching it too. A lot more people are concerned than they used to be, and I'm sure that makes people feel even more embarrassed about me. Because I've seen people go back to old shows where I'm doing my damnedest to warn everybody, even people I don't like. And, because I'm concerned that something is wrong. Because you know me, I mean, that's why a lot of the non-canon stuff, it's like, if you enjoy it, go enjoy it. You don't have to come bother me. What's going on? And that was why Helena was so awesome, because she's like, yeah, I enjoy it, and I'm not going to throw it at you, because I know it's not your thing. And it was a choice. A preference. And, I think she still enjoys some of it. But yeah, I was just like, "What? Then why are you bothering me if this is not what you like?" And so obviously something is going on where you're being led into wanting to focus on things that you don't want to focus on. That's not your preference. Oh yeah. Thankfully, because I was trying to find out what is the big deal. Why are people bothering me if I'm, you know, there's tons of these non-canon stories with Julia Barnabas. There's Helena's made one with Barnabas and Angelique. I didn't find it canon enough for my personal taste, but if that's what you want. And that was the great thing, too. I told her, I think that ends happily, right? Because Lisa let me know she had read quite a few fanzine Barnabas Angelique stories. She's all, they never ended happy. So you go to Helena's, you know, it's alternate universe, but if that's what you want, it's there. As far as I know, that's like the one that's going to end happily. But yeah, I mean, for yourself, if you want to choose it, that's why I say you've turned me off. But if you want to find it, then go ahead and find it. There's plenty of it, I'm sure. So yeah, something was going on. And I did find something that helped me understand more than the Little Women stuff. Because the Little Women stuff, Joe and Lori, I was just puzzled. It was just puzzled. Like, why, you know, they're so chummy. Why not? And then I read Little Men and Joe's Boys and, what is it, like, the 1860s. And then I think the last one was 1886 was written. So, you know, over 100 years, I just get baffled why anyone has to be upset about it. However, I did a little more delving a year or two ago, and me and Helena talked about that because I put it on the WordPress log, about Twin Peaks. And I was going back in time just because I couldn't figure out why there was so much advertisement with pictures of Audrey from Twin Peaks and Dale Cooper. It's like, why were they doing that to us? But then, what's funny is when I really thought about it, I could get a sense of, okay, why is this? Because you get all these images of Barnabas and Julie together, and it gets you into the mindset of, why am I being showed this if it's not going to happen? Because they tease you. That's why. And so, yeah, you could feel a little betrayed. But then I remember, I think it was second season of Twin Peaks, the original, not any of that new stuff, where there was a girl that Agent Dale Cooper was interested in. Did I feel any animosity towards her? No. I was thinking, yeah, I didn't feel any problems. Like, I wasn't affronted by whoever the gal was that he was interested in, and it was fun to watch the sheriff go, hey, Cooper, you're kind of really digger, or whatever it was that he said. But I was fine, you know? I didn't feel affronted. I didn't feel, like, hurt. You know, there was a girl interested in him. He was interested in her. And minus this being, you know, the production that it was, it seemed to be mutual working out and all that. So, yeah. So when I was trying to get the answers, people would just... Minus Helena. She did not throw any Barnabas Julia romances at me at all. Which provides evidence that she was very well grounded in her decisions, you know, and not worried about mine. But when I would ask, I would just get a lot of fan work thrown at me. And I'm like, this is not answering my question. My question is, what is the problem? And when I went back to Twin Peaks, I was a teenager, you know, so of course I'd be interested in a fairly dubious situation like that and thinking, well, why are they showing it on, you know, almost showing it on the TV or showing it in all these pictures if we're not, you know, gonna see it. So that, going back in time, that seemed to give me more of the answers than I think anyone else could have given me about how everybody was feeling. Like, why is there this insecurity? I mean, you got gobs of stories. What's the problem? So something earlier had shown me, well, maybe it's just short-lived satisfaction. You keep on wanting more because the first 50 or whatever it is that you read is just not adding up. It's not convincing you anymore. So that's good. That's decent. And that's, yeah. And I think that is another struggle, is that some of these situations, it's something going on with the person. So rather than actually writing about who Barnabas and Julia actually are, they're writing about other people, just using the names and using the looks and using the geographical locations and that kind of thing. So it's, yeah, I apologize, but I was being given a lot of nonsense, and I didn't want to focus on that. I wanted to focus on other things. I tried my darndest to focus on what I wanted to focus on. I've reached somewhere where it seems like I'm able to do that again. Doesn't get rid of the history, though. Yeah, so there's that. And I want to try and wrap this up. I have stuff on my DreamWidth journal about defragmentation. I've run that across my auntie, the idea, because for people who feel like, oh, where's all my loved ones? You know, they just are not making sense. If you're able to make sense again, the way I can kind of make sense again. Yeah, I ran across this idea to my auntie, and she was like, yeah, that sounds right. It was defragmentation. Now, if you understand computers, or used to and are trying to get back into it, defragmentation sort of shifts a lot of stuff on the hard drive so that there's more space in the end, so that it's not, like, cluttered everywhere. And I don't remember exactly how it works, but I thought, well, maybe for us humans we need something like that. So I've written about that in my DreamWidth journal, just to give people a few ideas, because I think for a metaphoric defragmentation of a human being, it would have to be on a very individual level, and that depends on who you are. So if you can journal yourself and go back in time and look through what you grew up on, and if you could just revisit that without any kind of distraction, any kind of notifications getting in your way, any kind of advertisements, that kind of thing, if you can do that, that is where you start, is trying to find what made up your formative years, the good parts, if there are good parts, and just going down those memory lanes and trying to reestablish the information that you gathered throughout your life. Heaven knows what to do for the kids. I don't know. I mean, I can't even imagine. You know, hopefully some of the kids out there have had something semi-close to what we had with, like, Sesame Street and Mr. Rogers, and, or just, you know, kind of decent children's shows, or maybe even radio dramas. I don't know. I don't know if listening to my whole rigmarole show again, if you've grown up on that, I apologize, but if I don't know if that would help. I kind of noticed, like, well, maybe that's what some of these stats are, that's what somebody's trying to do, is go back in time and reestablish how they got to know me and got lost along the way. I don't know, but hopefully there is enough material out there through either Internet Archive or Gutenberg or whatever you got around the house, anything they haven't thrown away. You know, like I say, old journals, or if you can go through old emails that you sent, if you have sent stuff, you can go through just as old, as far back as you can get, if it's possible. Yeah. So, I want to wrap this up and get it out there. I know it's terribly rambly, but considering what we've all been going through, what more can I do? What more do you expect? But I want to get it out to a couple of the sites, but maybe not WordPress, because I'm hoping to get this out before October. That's why I said it was September, October. Spoiler cast update. Ramble. Because I want the Social Dilemma to stay at the top of the WordPress weblog, like the basic one that I made years ago, because people really do need to see that. And I keep watching it, too. I'm probably... We were able to watch it before, but, I mean, just the YouTube stuff is so easy. You just dunk, and, yeah, I've probably had it play about 6 times at me. Yeah. So, there's only, I think it's going to cease in October, like it, or the end of September, but, so that's why I'm making this a September-October show. We'll see if I can get it out there, and praying to heaven that you're all doing better, and, yeah, I can imagine that if you've been angsty at me and didn't know where that was coming from and have pulled away from what was causing it, if there's some embarrassment, yeah. I hope that there is, it's genuine, because that would be a good sign. That's another reason that I haven't been able to finish or do a retrospective for 16, because that was probably when I was going through the worst of the social media addiction and the hype problems and trying to just get the heck out. It's, not happy to go back to creating the Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows episode 16, because, I mean, I had Beetlejuice on my plate and so much more that was just awful. That year, or the couple of years that I was dealing with that. It wasn't just Beetlejuice, but that, you know, that was the horrific icing on the cake of trying to escape. And when I've talked about social media addiction, I don't really call it quitting. I call it escape, because there's more to it than just your choice of turning it on. There's way more going on. So yeah, I don't call it quitting, I call it escape. And I hope you can too. And there are other alternatives through Humane Tech. One is a messaging system called Signal, so that could replace Facebook Messenger if you're stuck to that. And Marco Polo, I think. I didn't make an account, but that looks like another alternative to Fartbook, without any likes and without such followers and all that gunk that should never have been there to begin with. So they have those. There's also a picture thing that it was like, I think, a 3 or 4 letter acronym. I can't remember what it was. I didn't check it out. So yeah, there are alternatives. They tend to be donation based. And as it seems to keep turning out, a lot of the donation based things are the ones that are more trustworthy. Doggone wood. So yeah, I maybe I'll make another show for plain October, but this is a September-October one for the sake of trying to give you something to work with. Yeah, it's scary, but I am with the people who are optimistic just for the sake that we've never had a chance to let us all really solve problems together. And we want to, because we get so frustrated at all that news garbage and all the hype. It just frustrates us, and that's the point, is to frustrate us. Which doesn't help. But I think, like at the end of Axemaker's Gift by James Burke and Robert Ornstein, that book, if we can find that way to work together, I think that is what pretty much all of us want. We've been striving to be useful and to solve problems. And I do old shows, old books, and I do problem solving, so maybe what I am putting together here is a lot more important than I thought. All right. You all take care and get in touch when you can. XOISCYTHE at hotmail.com. Or you can sign up on DreamWidth because I still use it. And I hope you're all doing good. Take care.